We're getting ready spiritually for difficult times, and now we want to go back to the little focus on physical preparation. And one of the things that's important in difficult times, crisis situations, is this idea of communication. You know, of course, we know that the Holy Spirit is the communicator that we want to hear from most of all. There was a lady that lived in Japan in World War II. She was actually a believer. And she woke up one night, and it's like the Lord told her, get up and grab your children and run to the other side of the mountain. And she responded immediately. And she got to the other side of the mountain, and there was this massive explosion. It was Nagasaki. And because of that, her family was spared from that atomic explosion. She listened to the voice of the Holy Spirit. But there's also physical communication that's important in difficult times as well. And it can actually mean life and death in certain instances. And the ability to communicate, we're talking about sending information and receiving information. That's basically what communication is. And so when a region is encountering crisis, this ability to communicate is really important. It's necessary prior to crisis because you can see that the development of these situations. Think of weather. You know, if we don't have ability to receive information coming in about weather situations, then we can't respond appropriately. We can't take shelter. We can't get our heads down in the bunker, so to speak. So it's important to have information and communication prior to crisis. It's also important during crisis, as these developments are occurring, to be able to throw information back and forth. For example, when we had, I think it was our last round of heavy weather, Anne was, she was in Colonial Heights, I was in Gate City, and she was aware, you know, this weather coming in, but I was able to feed her more accurate information as it was developing, even though I was in Gate City, because I had, you know, more accurate information at my disposal. So I was able to tell her to get her head down in the right place. So during a crisis, it's important to have ability to communicate back and forth. And then after a crisis has passed, then it's still important to have information coming back and forth into that crisis situation. Think of Joplin after the tornado came through. Everything was wiped out. The only communication that was available in Joplin for about 2 or 3 days was ham radio operators. They were completely blacked out. So if they hadn't had the ham radio operators, just think of the it was chaos already, but just think of the added chaos without being able to communicate. And then, thinking of Joplin, Tuscaloosa, some of these other things that have been happening, you just have to assume that in a crisis situation, the normal modes of communication are going to be disrupted. So you have to plan ahead of time for alternatives. How are we going to communicate if, you know, cell phones aren't available? How are we going to be able to communicate if landlines aren't available? How are we going to be able to communicate if the power grid goes down? So all these things are important to consider. So for the purposes of communications, we're talking about basically telephones, radios, the internet. Does anybody have any carrier pigeons in here? That might be an alternative, but it's probably not going to happen. But I could see where we might have to go to something like that. Okay, let's look at telephones. Does anybody still have a corded landline in their home? And a lot of people have shifted away from that because of the flexibility of cell phones, but most people don't realize that if the power grid goes down, many times you can still use your corded landline phone, because the power that comes into those phones, it comes across the telephone lines, and they're unaffected by the electrical lines, the power lines. So you can still communicate sometimes through a corded landline. So they might outlast your ability to communicate with a cell phone. You know, if you lost your power and your cell phone charger was gone, or the charge went out, then you could still possibly communicate with the landline. So it might be worthwhile to consider keeping that. Okay, then cell phones, we all know how convenient they are, how much we lean on those as far as getting information, especially with the new types of phones that are out there now. You know, the 3G, 4G networks and things like that. It's unbelievable the communication that takes place and how we depend on them. But if the electrical grid goes down, your battery is only going to be charged for so long. So you have to think of alternatives. How can I recharge my phone? Of course, you got your car battery. As long as you got that going, you can still recharge it. But also some of these other ways that we mentioned earlier in some of these talks, that there are manual chargers that you can hand crank and recharge your cell phone, and also solar. So those are things to consider to have available for yourself. But the other thing is, even if you have a charge on your cell phone in a crisis situation, it may still be impossible to communicate because there's going to be such an overload on the system that it'll crash. Now, that happened at Virginia Tech when they had the shootings several years ago. The power grid was okay. Everything was fine, but people couldn't communicate because their cell phone services were crashed. Everybody was on there at the same time. But you still might be able to send a text message when you still might not be able to communicate verbally. Cell phones. Okay, how about radios? AM, FM radios. I'm sure everybody has an AM, FM radio. But be sure to consider the fact that it might be important to have alternative ways to charge it. You know, hand cranking, solar power, etc., etc. But on the AM/FM network, you can get lots of local news and local conditions, as well as emergency broadcasts. So that's important to have an AM/FM connection. Secondly, general coverage receivers. We're talking about shortwave. Now, why would that be important? Well, in certain situations, you can still get information from other sources outside of the country. I mean, you see what's going on right now in the political realm, how things are being filtered here and there. In a disaster situation, it might even be filtered more. You can get clear understanding of what's going on in your region or in the world if you get it from a shortwave source, maybe from Britain or whatever. So the shortwave option is really important. But again, you want a radio, shortwave radio, that can be recharged by hand cranking or solar cells, so that so that when the charge runs out, you can keep it going again. NOAA weather radios. Everybody have a NOAA weather radio capability, either on their cell phone or at home. It's a continuous broadcast by on a certain band that is continually giving out information weather-wise. It's governmental, but they're always giving you information about what's going on weather-wise. And we've used one for years. It'll wake you up in the middle of the night if you've got a storm coming, et cetera, et cetera. So that's a really good source to have. Radio scanners. Does anybody have a radio scanner at home where you can monitor police and paramedics and things like that, what's going on? That's a real good source of information. You can imagine in an emergency situation, a crisis situation, how important it would be to have that kind of information coming into your, what are the police talking about? What are the fire and rescue people talking about? What's going on? You can get some good information there. And then there's number E, there's two-way radio transmitters. I'm talking about basically walkie-talkies, CB radios, and something called general mobile radio services. They advertise these as being able to broadcast and receive about a 25-mile distance, but in reality, they only go a couple of miles. Those are if you're standing on the top of Mount Everest and trying to broadcast to Mount Everest, another Mount Everest 20 miles away, you know, you could get a clear connection there, but if you're on the ground, it's still only about as good as a walkie-talkie. So, but that's a possibility as far as communication. Now, here's another one: amateur ham radios. I mentioned those were what kept things going in Joplin. And this is really a great option. I think of our area here. If we, you know, there's lots of ham radio operators in this area, but you know, I'm thinking about myself in Kingsport. I'm thinking of somebody else in Johnson City, somebody else in Bristol. If how do you communicate if everything else is down? And these ham radios can broadcast over a long distance. So if we had a ham radio operator in Johnson City, say Bill Kulikowski actually has a license and he can operate a ham radio. If we had another ham radio operator in Kingsport and another one in Bristol, we could, you know, we could keep a real good information network going for the people that are in those respective areas. And it's real simple to get a, they call it a general technician's class license. And we're working on getting one right now. All you have to do is study about 300 questions. And these, and out of those 300 questions, the test that they give, there's like 35 questions on it. And they're the exact questions that you study out of the 300. And you can easily get a ham radio operator's license. So I'll get to that in just a minute. Okay, then the other way to receive information is by the internet. And as long as the power grid is up and up and running, you can still communicate via email, instant messaging, Skype, etc. But again, that system can be quickly overloaded as well. And then there's a lot of scenarios where it could be brought down quickly. And in Egypt, you can see what happened with the government there. They brought the system down. They brought the, you know, when all that stuff was going on in Egypt, they brought it down. Or they attempted to, the government attempted to. Okay, here's the consideration. For example, say our group here. How would we establish a local communications network, emergency network? And like I was mentioning, if we had somebody that could operate a ham radio in, and we're talking about this like a little handheld ham radio, real simple to operate, real simple, relatively inexpensive. If we had somebody in Bristol, if we had somebody in Johnson City, if we had somebody in Kingsport, we could keep our communications going. And for example, people in Kingsport could log in or could be connected to the ham radio operator in Kingsport for up-to-date information, etc. Same thing in Johnson City. It'd be a way to pass information. You know, you understand what I'm saying? It's like a network. But these are nodal points where you would be able to get information and be able to send out information from that point as well. So we'll work on maybe kind of developing that.
Yeah.
Oh, no, we're talking about the ability to receive and send. See, that's the beauty of that, is you're not only just receiving information, but you have the ability to send it out as well. And, you know, we would be a trusted network. I could trust, for example, if you were in Jonesboro and you had a ham radio and you were an operator, I could trust the information that I was getting from you. And you could trust what you're getting from me. And that would be a quick way to update, be a quick way to connect people. You know, say a tornado hit Johnson City and people were displaced. You could funnel yourselves to that, through that ham, another ham operator, and give information. Does that make any sense? Okay, let's skip down to number 5, establish a family communications plan. I'll have to say that we're guilty. We have not established the family communications plan officially. There should be a way for us to communicate with members of our family locally, and if they're in other areas, if a disaster happened. For example, if something happened in Lubbock right now, Jonathan's in Lubbock, I don't have any way to know what's going on with him, and it's possible. If everything was shut down, I would not know where he is, how he's doing, unless we have a system to get in contact with each other again. So the purpose of this section is to get you to start thinking about developing a way, you know, a scenario where you could develop a plan for your family members to communicate with each other if they get displaced or if the communication system goes down. So there's two things to consider. Number one, well, you know, the one thing too is, you know, there might be, and Anna were talking about this the other day. She said, you know, you're in Gate City, I'm in Kingsport. What would happen if something happened and the bridges were knocked down? How are you going to get, you know, back and forth to me? So we had never even thought about that. And much less if we couldn't communicate with each other. How do you reestablish, you know, your connection? How do you get back together, et cetera, et cetera? So you have to think about these things ahead of time. So number A, plan. You have to have a plan for your family members. And then each family member should carry a list that includes A, local contact information. You want to have the name and home address of a local contact person that if you were displaced, you would automatically get to this other person either by email, physically, telephone, etc., and let them know you're okay. So they need your home and cell phone numbers, their email address, etc. And then you need a designated place to meet if you're forced to move from home. And then you have a primary and an alternate. It's just kind of thinking these things through. Remember how long it took people to, you know, they had like so many people were missing in Joplin. And it took them a couple of weeks to kind of connect all the dots and figure out who was really missing, who wasn't missing, and putting a name with a face and a body, etc. And if you have this thought out ahead of time, then you can quickly, you know, get the information of your family members out there, and you can get reconnected quickly. Okay, and then you should have a place, say our whole area was wiped out, you would want to have another out-of-state contact point. For example, most people have family out-of-state, and so you would make sure that your family members had the home address and name of your out-of-state contact person, probably a family member, their home and cell phone numbers, email address, etc., so that you could, you know, let them know you're okay, and then everybody else could connect in that manner. And then finally, it might be good to have pictures of your other family members. And those pictures could be copied and distributed to media to help locate anyone that was missing. Something that you don't think about. Like, I should have some pictures available of all my family members. You should have pictures of all our family members, Jonathan, Josh, and Tim. We should all have pictures available that we can give to somebody else to help locate somebody that might be missing. Just a thought, you know, you just don't think about these things. Anybody have any questions? I don't know if I was very clear. I would really like to, you know, we'll get back to this at some point about developing this network of communication. You know, have nodal points where you have a ham ability to communicate on a ham device, and then people that would in a locality would be connected to that. And then we'll get a list of how to notify each other, get information going back and forth. Chen.
Sure. Purchase a little handheld product, and then you know, we would get together.